Thank you, Joe. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Paul.
There. Hope you guys are all keeping up with your reading. You having fun reading Chronicles? Yeah. I asked Philip. I was talking to Philip because I've been making sure he's been keeping up with it. And I'm like, what do you think of what you read? And he told me what you read. And I'm like, I'm surprised you remembered any of that because I had a hard time not falling asleep reading some of this reading. So just keep it up. I mean, some of it's boring, but it's certainly there for a good reason. You know, I don't know what it is about me, but people feel the need to give me books. And I like books. I like to read. And this week I was talking to this lady, and after she goes, oh, I want to give you some books. And she was really excited to give me these books. And she goes, but I want this one back. You got to give me this one back. I don't think I've ever had anybody give me a book and ask for one back before. But, okay, well, I'll read it and I'll give it back to you. And one of the books she gave me was written by a man named Millard Fuller. You guys know who that is? Huh. I doubt any of you would know his name, but you definitely know what he created, because he created one of the most famous Christian organizations in history. And he did it by giving all of his money away before he even started it. He created Habitat for Humanity. She's very passionate about his secondary project that he created, the Fuller House, which is an offshoot of Habitat for Humanity. And she wanted me to read this book that he wrote. I'm like, okay, I'll read it. And I was really inspired by this book. That one, I read it in like 2 hours. And two, I changed my whole sermon this week just so I could focus on a point that he made in his book. And he makes two of them. And the first one he talks about is being dug up. Do you guys know this southern expression, dug up? I'm not from the South. I've never heard this expression before. But in this point, he talks about this lady, one of the very first ladies they ever built a house for. So this was back in the 70s. And so while this lady was getting ready to move into her house, she had to be at her old location for at least 6 months. And she was a sharecropper. She lived on this farm, and she leased part of the farm and gave the proceeds to the person who actually owned the farm. Well, these people weren't happy that she was going to move away, and she wasn't going to be helping them anymore. So they decided to, I guess, burn the bridges down, and one of the things they did was cut off their water. So for 6 months, this lady had no water at all. Until Christmas time came, the lady went to the lady of the owner went to Miss Ethel here, and she says, I need you to make me some cakes for Christmas. And she says, well, how do you expect me to make these cakes? I don't have any water. And the lady's like, well, you can come over to my house and make the cakes. And Mr. Fuller's like, well, what'd you do? And she says, I'll tell you what I did. I just went over to her house and baked those cakes. But to do that, you've got to be dug up. You've got to set your emotions aside and realize that as a believer in Christ, you're going to be called to do things that don't make you happy, but you have to be better than the world. I'm like, wow. I mean, I don't think I'd do it. I think I might want to tell the lady to shove it. You cut off my water and then you expect me to work from you? No, it doesn't work that way. But I love the passion of reading about this lady that I've never met who is able to say, okay, I will do it because I want you to know who I am. There's so many things the world does that changes us. And for this lady, she was losing a big portion of her health. It was affecting her wealth. Wealth does change people. There's a lot of studies that show that wealth, maybe not at first, but over gradual time, that it's going to change who you are as a person. Not everybody, but most people tend to become less compassionate, less empathetic. They tend to think they're better than others, especially if they have tremendous amounts of wealth. They tend to raise their children through alternate child care, not by raising them their own. And then their children start to, because they're not getting good parenting skills, start to rebel against them, start to act out in ways that make them also feel these things. And so Luke talks about this point in the 16th chapter of his gospel. And to get us there, he's going to talk about how it's affecting the Pharisees. He says, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all of these things and they ridiculed him. And he goes on to say that you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God. So wealth isn't the problem. The problem is they have an issue with the heart. Because that's what it always comes down to, right? It's what is affecting your heart. And sometimes it's your wealth, sometimes it's your passions, your desires, or maybe sometimes you're just not in a good mood. I don't know. But it all comes down to what is going on in your heart at this particular time. And to illustrate this point, he tells a great parable. I love this parable. This parable is unique. It's only found in the Gospel of Luke. And it's a parable of two complete opposites in almost every sense of the word. And who they are as people, where they go, and how they view life. It's so contrast that I doubt most of us would ever be on one side or the other in its extremes. And the first thing he says, there's a rich man. Well, the second part, he tells us the name of the poor man. Why doesn't he tell us the name of the rich man? Some people will say, probably because it doesn't matter. But I think it's more to do of, that would tell you exactly who you were talking about. In a place, in this time, in this place, if you said the rich man, you were probably thinking of one of two people. So when someone says the rich man, they know exactly who he's talking about. They know he's very, very wealthy. He spares no expense. He dresses like a king. He eats. He doesn't just eat like a normal person eats. He eats like he's having a festival every single day. That is how wealthy this man is. But by contrast, there's the poor man. We know who he is. He's Lazarus. Why is Lazarus given the name? Because poverty is so common that you would have to name the person by name. And in this case, Lazarus isn't just poor, he's excessively poor and in poor health. He's suffering, he barely gets table scraps, he lives at the gates of this man's house, and he's basically dependent on the little bit that he gets to survive. Now, what happens to these men is what happens to everybody. There's no avoiding this fate. Everybody's going to die. How you die is probably up for debate, but the fact that you are going to die someday is going to happen. It says, the world didn't care about Lazarus. And so that's because they didn't care about him, that's how he died. It doesn't say anything about a funeral. It doesn't say anything about friends and family going to him. It just says he died and he was carried away because the other world, the world that's coming next, it certainly did care about him. And they spared no expense. That expense actually mattered at that time. It says he was carried away by angels and he was brought to the very best figure in the Old Testament to be taken care of. By contrast, the rich man who had everything for him his whole life, who probably had this grand funeral with professional weepers. Yes, that was a thing back then. You paid people to come and cry at your funeral. Well, you didn't. You were probably dead, but it happened for people with excessive wealth. He was probably had a tomb. He probably was buried with his ancestors. It would have been expensive. But by contrast, none of that mattered. Because he did not go to heaven. He went to hell. Now, back to this book I told you I was reading. He's talking about this point. He has a whole chapter about this point. And he brings up something I never even considered before. And he goes, most of you, when you read this story, you have this impression of this rich man. You think that he's callous. You think that he's unemotional. You think he's uncaring. And he doesn't care about this guy at all. And he goes, but I'm going to make the case that he actually is. He says, look at this verse here, verse in 21. He says, who desired to be fed with what fell from the rich man's table. He's like, this guy's rich. He could certainly make sure if he didn't want this poor man at his gate, he would have got rid of him. But instead, the poor man chose this spot to stay because he knew he could get something. And what he was getting was table crumbs. Now, he goes on to say that this rich man isn't bad because he has good things. Now, those good things were things he got from God. Everything that we have that is good essentially comes from God. He argues that this rich man is bad because he's a terrible steward. And that even though he had the resources to help this man out, instead, he just gave him enough to live. I wouldn't even argue enough. I would say just barely enough to hang on to his terrible situation. And he says, what kind of person does that say about him? He thought he was doing good, but instead he was really just having him hold on to a terrible life. He says, this is how a lot of us approach our giving. He said, he uses this example of this preacher named Tony Campolo who sings the song All to Jesus I Surrender. But to illustrate the point, he's like, we say we surrender all to Jesus, but really we're giving him our 10%. 10% to Jesus I surrender, 10% to him I freely give. I surrender 10%, I surrender 10%. 10% to Jesus I surrender 10%. And that's if we're giving 10%. When Paul writes about it in 2 Corinthians, says, it doesn't really matter how much you give as long as you're giving with your heart the way that God intends for you to give. But if you're giving grudgingly, if you're just giving table scraps, then you have a bigger problem. You have a heart problem. When I was growing up, I heard this joke. It talks about this man who goes to the gates of heaven, and he meets Peter at the gates, and he Peter's like, what have you done in your life that's good? He goes, one time I gave a guy a dollar. He goes, okay, what else? He thinks about it, he goes, oh, another time I gave another guy a dollar. He goes, is that it? He goes, yeah. And I go, okay, well, let me go check with God. And so Peter goes to God, and he goes, I got this guy here, he's given $2 in his life. And he goes, okay, give him his $2 back and send him on his way. God doesn't expect us to pass out crumbs. He expects us to go out into the world and give ourselves over to the lifestyle he has called us to live. And that's not always a money thing. That is certainly a time and effort. And I really kind of want to brag on two people in our congregation right now, because I really see this in them, that these are the people that dedicated so much of their time to giving back because they love God. And they just finished one project and now they're moving on to the next. Amber and Regina, you guys are awesome. And you guys can help them out because they're collecting school supplies. And this is the tax-free weekend. So go out and buy some school supplies for them. But we are not expected to just give these table scraps. We are expected to give with our every being. And so what happens in the story? The story flips. And so we see, now the tables have turned. It is no longer the rich man in comfort, but it's now the rich man in torment. He's moved from clean to unclean, from fed to hungry, to healthy to suffering, to having this inheritance, to being an outcast. And certainly he has lost all his comfort. And so the rich man, he's not happy. I can't imagine anybody being happy with this situation. And so he tries to engage in fallacies. And these fallacies further, a fallacy is a problem with thinking, a logical problem with thinking. And this really further illustrates on how bad of a steward he was. He didn't really know the law or know what it meant to go on to the next life, that he thought that there was things that could happen that were obviously never, ever going to happen. He thought he would still be important, that he could, that his cries for mercy could be heard. But he's rejected. And so he says, wasn't I your son? Aren't you my father, Abraham? Yeah, you may be able to claim that, but that doesn't really matter if you're not in the faith. If you don't do what you're supposed to do, then there is no salvation for you. He goes, but okay, maybe I can't go to heaven, but maybe you can at least ease my torment. Didn't you study the scripture? You know that that's not possible. You cannot go from one place to the other. And even if you could, that would not be right for the people who earned it. To send them there for 1 second would be torment for them as well. And she says, okay, maybe none of that can happen. But send someone else to my brothers. Warn them. Give them divine intervention. And he says, they've already got it. They've got the law. They've got the prophets. They've seen the miracles. And of course, we can even extend this analogy to Jesus himself. Many people were with Jesus every day, and they saw his miracles. And those same people walked away. So, yeah, maybe some believed because they saw those miracles. But what does Jesus say about that? That blessed are those who believe without seeing. And so none of this was going to happen for him ever. But this message isn't about him, because he is just a hypothetical. This message is about us and what we're going to do next. Are we the kind of people that are going to be crumb givers? Or are we going to be those that give generously? This is one of the reasons I really like this book. Is that at the point of every chapter, he writes a few questions that he wants you to ask yourself. He says, look at what you've spent your time with in the last year. There are 168 hours every week. Multiply that by 52. One third of that will be sleeping. If you sleep 8 hours, and let's be honest, none of us do. He's like, one third of that will be working, and the rest of it will be wasting our time doing things that just make us feel happy for a few moments. Not finding the joy that we should be looking for as brothers and sisters in Christ. We need to reassess how we use that time and make sure that we're not ignoring the suffering that's going on around us. That is not our nature as Christians. And we need to go out in the world and do the right thing. Sometimes that thing is really uncomfortable. Especially the very, very first time you did it. We had that barbecue for the police this weekend. And it's just like, hi everybody, come and eat. We don't want anything for you. We're just here to feed you. But yeah, I kind of like to talk to you if I can. I don't know you, but I still want to talk to you because that's who Christ calls mean to be, who could call us to be. But if we don't follow these things, we're going to fall on that path that the rich man fell into, this being a bad steward, being a bad person, being a bad believer. And that's something we certainly do not want because of what that means for us. If that's something we can help you out with, if you'd like to respond to this message in any way, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing this song.